The Monologue.
We were wondering who has so little respect for the First Amendment, for free speech in this state, that they'd put their name on Governor Jay Inslee's plan to ban political speech that he dislikes. Turns out that name is David Frocht, senator from Seattle, of course. This is a bill that bans lying about an election, basically calling out the systems that we have in place. And it's the Democrats who get to decide if someone is, quote-unquote, lying. They're talking about this in the Seattle Times, or at least quoted in the Times. David Frocht, state senator from Seattle, offered a hypothetical scenario where a candidate loses an election and then claims that there was fraud. Quote, and supporters hear that and they decide, well, I'm going to go and firebomb the place. And they go and firebomb the place. That's not totally dissimilar, arguably, to what took place on January 6th, but it's a little more of an extreme example. It is, in fact, totally dissimilar to what happened on January 6th, where people, sans weapons, committed a insurrection. It would make it a gross misdemeanor for any elected official or any candidate to, quote-unquote, lie about election results if those lies lead to violence. So one could very quickly see how this could be used in a malicious way. I could be a political opponent of someone, commit an act of violence as a result, knowing that it would get that person put in jail. That seems problematic. It'd be subject to a fine of $5,000 or jail for 364 days. Now, the ACLU of Washington only offered up a limp condemnation of this. They have, quote, initial concerns. Why do they only have initial concerns? Well, because the lawmakers here are their people. These are Democrats, and this is a fringe organization, the ACLU. Now, this is arguably the most dangerous law on the books. This is arguably the most dangerous law right now being considered by Washington State. Because if you lose your free speech rights, you will not be able to truly speak up without fear of being thrown in jail when other rights are taken from you. Understand that it starts with this, and they are, you know, shrouding themselves in this self-righteousness. We are standing up for election integrity because democracy is on the line. But what do you think happens next? Maybe that letter that went to Spotify to condemn Joe Rogan and try to stop him from saying things they dislike, maybe that's what's next. It's illegal to spread COVID misinformation, misinformation deemed by the people who previously told you something was true when it turns out to be false. The person, in other words, who currently says masks totally work, put the more cloth masks we have out there, the better. That person would be able to fine someone, throw them in jail for saying cloth masks don't work, even though now we are being told by the CDC that cloth masks don't in fact work. This is pure and simple. This is about going after anyone who says anything that they disagree with. This is how it starts. You don't want to be around for how it ends, because it ends in a way that silences pretty much anything that they disagree with. And this is coming from the party that wants to redefine words, that wants to bully you into silence, that wants to create on Microsoft a new woke filter to change your language to make sure it's more inclusive. Those are the folks who are behind this. And it's dangerous.
The interview.
Ann Davison, of course, is now the Seattle City Attorney. But how long before she's able to get the situation in Seattle under control? And is it even fair to place the burden almost singularly on her? Joining me on the line is Brandi Cruz, the host of Undivided. You can get it, of course, at patreon.com/undivided. Brandi, welcome back to the show.
Hello, my friend.
You focus that topic for your videocast and podcast out today. Is it fair to put the pressure so much so on Ann Davison? Because I feel like people are expecting her to just fix this within the next few hours.
Well, I don't think it's putting pressure on anything. It's putting our hopes on,
yeah.
on her, you know. And so, I think that she has made some promises on the campaign trail. And look, you know, you had Pete Holmes in that office for, what, 12 years? And so this is really the first time that we're going to see a different approach to prosecuting misdemeanor crimes in the city. And so, yeah, I do think in that regard, there is a little pressure on her, sure.
How much of a cultural change will it be for the office? She obviously comes in with different ideas. Will she face lots of resistance?
Well, yeah. I mean, the nice thing is she's an independently elected official. And this is one of the things we talked about is, you know, certainly the city council is not going to agree with you on a lot of issues. And she has had a meeting with Bruce Harrell. It seems like they might be kind of aligned, but I'm not sure about Bruce Harrell still. You know, I think one of my questions and concerns with him is how much he's going to sort of, you know, listen to the loudest voice in the room, or whether he can really stand by some of the things that he did on the campaign trail. And, you know, he was very clear about being dissatisfied with the state of public safety in the city. And so it's always hard to say if that's going to translate to someone in office. So the nice thing is Ann Davison, you know, can operate on a silo if she needs to. I wouldn't rule out, you know, the city council trying to pull more stunts by limiting the scope of her power or anything like that. It remains to be seen. But, you know, job number one for Ann Davison is she's got this huge backlog of cases. Mm-hmm. Some of them are nearing the point where they can no longer be prosecuted because of statute of limitations issues. And so I'll be curious how many of those cases she can get through. And I think she hired Brian Moran, a former U.S. attorney, to do that. And then also I will have tests pretty quick of what kinds of cases is she going to prosecute in a traditional way.
What are the cases, politically speaking, what are the types of cases that she can get away with pursuing in Seattle?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that everybody is on the same page. Well, not everybody, but rational people are on the same page that the shoplifting issue is out of control. And I mean, I was just posting a video from downtown Seattle yesterday of people hawking goods on the sidewalk, mm-hmm. which has been happening. And so I really hope that in instances where it's clearly, you know, people stealing booze and people who have an open bazaar on Third Avenue, I'm really hoping that she can prosecute those types of cases without any pushback. One of the first tests of that will be SPD did a sting in early December, you'll remember, down at the city Target at Two and Pine. And they, you know, they arrested, cited, and released 35 people on shoplifting related crimes. And so I'm curious, she said she has not looked at those cases yet. But I'm curious to see how she handles them.
Well, the other thing I'm curious to find out about is, you know, you've got cases that very clearly are felonies. And obviously felonies are not handled by the city attorney, but they are handled by, or not really handled by, Dan Satterberg, the prosecutor. And ultimately they get pushed down into misdemeanor charges. And, you know, that's why we have such a, like, significant prolific offender crisis in Seattle. And those prolific offenders do end up usually get in front of the city attorney.
Yeah, and people were commenting on something Ann Davison said in our interview where she said, I do want to understand in each case why someone is communicating through crime. And people are like, well, what does she mean by that? And I understand what she means because, you know, you can't just always throw the book at someone. It can't 100%. Always be that way. Because if you can identify cases where there's truly an underlying issue that the criminal justice system is not addressing, that's how you get repeat offenders. And so I hope that when she sees certain cases, if it is someone who's brand new to the system, you know, maybe this is the first offense or second offense, and she can understand what's happening with their lives, that she can stop the cyclical cycle of, you know, what's been happening. And I think so if she can balance those two things without being too lenient on, you know, serious crimes. And I would hope you'd mention, you know, felonies that turn into misdemeanors. I hope that if somebody's initial charge was a felony and it gets kicked down, they eventually get prosecuted for something.
Yeah, but we know that that doesn't happen, or traditionally it has not happened. Now, hopefully that will change. And I think your point is right on that. You know, I on Fox News today again talked about restorative justice programs. The left has decided that everyone should go into restorative justice when that's clearly not the right rule. The opposite also isn't true, that you shouldn't throw the book at absolutely everyone, that there is context to the crimes. Some crimes, regardless of whether or not it was a first-time offense or not, do deserve harsh punishments. But not all of them do. And the context behind why something happened should play a role, and I'm confident that Ann Davidson's going to be able to find that balance. But obviously, we'll find out if that's the case, as will you. You're the host of Undivided. You can subscribe at patreon.com/undivided. Brandi Crews, my friend, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Now this.
The Monologue.
Today is MLK Jr. Day, and folks are exploiting it for political gain. And, you know, I guess anything's up for grabs at this point. There are no standards whatsoever. You had earlier today Vice President Kamala Harris give a remarkably silly speech and also just weird. She was trying to smile throughout the whole thing. Someone told her to smile more so she's more relatable, and she comes off as weirder. And she used the holiday to push for this Democrat takeover of elections. And while I thought that would be the most cringeworthy and silly argument of the day, the honors actually go to Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas. She is very, very far to the left, very far. And she did an interview with MSNBC, and I want you to hear first just the question. Jose Diaz-Balart, he is the anchor. This is how he sets up the conversation.
We've already been seeing the impact of new voting restrictions in your home state. I mean, the Texas Tribune reports hundreds of applications for mail-in ballots for the March 1st primary have been rejected because local elections officials couldn't match either a driver's license or social security number as required by stricter rules put into place last year. And it's not clear if people whose applications were rejected will have time to fix the issue. What is going on in Texas?
Okay. He frames that entirety around some sort of unbelievable issue of, can you believe that they rejected applications that don't actually match the data that we have on? How can someone put in a ballot application that doesn't get connected to their own driver's license or social security and they rejected it? What? He starts it off by acting as if that's somehow illegal or crazy. This wasn't someone who's like, you know what, they circled a little bit, they filled out that little oval next to whether or not they're male or female or other, and it was just a little bit outside the lines, and they rejected the whole thing. No, literally could not prove that the person who is applying exists. That somehow is outrageous. This was Sheila Jackson Lee's response.
You have really highlighted the fight and the intrusion on democracy.
Intrusion!
You know, elections are not about candidates. Elections about individuals having the ability to express their frustration, their love of democracy, their support for their views and
policies. Yeah, we know what elections are.
And for the affirmation that they are an American and we live in a democracy. We're not dictated to. We're given the opportunity to choose someone of our choice, no matter what our political views are. And what is happening in Texas is what we see as I told you so. Why? Hundreds or tens upon tens of state representatives left the state to stop this legislation, this dastardly legislation. I don't know if these persons will have the right or the ability to fix the issue, but hundreds of ballots are being thrown out or rejected because it doesn't match the number. And the number is complicated.
Are numbers complicated?
No.
You know your Social Security, yeah?
Yeah.
Is that complicated?
Nope.
If you didn't remember it, could you find it really quickly?
Easily.
What about your driver's license?
No, got that.
There are some letters, though, in yours.
There are.
Is that confusing?
Nope.
Exactly. Let's understand this. If I were to register in Texas using Peyton's Social Security number, but my name and address, his ballot would come to me, according to Sheila Jackson Lee, and that's okay.
The interview.
Well, the Biden administration had a pretty crummy week last week, though, in fairness, to those who didn't necessarily notice, the whole first year in office has been nothing but a dumpster fire. Joining me to discuss is Joe Bob. He's a brand new contributor to Turning Point USA. Joe Bob, congratulations on the new role over at TP USA, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on. And just really quick, Joe Bob is legally on my birth certificate. One grandpa was Joe, the other one was Bob, so if people are a little bit confused, that's where that comes from.
Love it. Yeah, you got to clear things up immediately or people are going to ask some questions. So but Biden is dealing with horrible polling. He's losing the fight to overtake elections. The filibuster isn't going away, at least not at this point. What part of last week do you think was the worst?
I think it would have to be what was the worst thing that he did, I think, was the rally in Atlanta, Georgia, talking about the quote-unquote Voting Rights Act, which is really just the federal government taking over the state's rights to conduct its own elections. But I think that was the worst thing that he did, then compounded by the next day coming out of the presser, a meeting with some senators at a presser saying, yeah, I don't think we actually are going to get those done. So those two things in tandem, I think, were probably the worst things on top of a ton of other bad things, like you were mentioning, that happened with the president last week.
Do you get the sense that it's just that he's championing really bad ideas, or do you think it's also no one seems to take leadership from him, that he's not inspiring folks to act?
I honestly think that he might just be realizing the lame duckness early in his presidency and just going after campaign dollars is what I think he's doing. Because, he has the ability to, I guess, issue statements and give speeches that would probably bring people more together, but instead he goes with the most divisive tactic that he can, especially as evidenced by that speech in Atlanta that he gave regarding the voting rights thing. And I think that's kind of more of his mentality of just, I'm just going to try and do as best I can for my side of the aisle.
Is it working? Because when you look at the amount of dollars that Republicans are bringing in, I mean, it's absolutely insane.
So is it working? To answer your question, no, I don't think so. I'm in the state of California, Commifornia, as I affectionately call it. And I've got a lot of friends that lean pretty hardcore to the left that are looking at the gas prices and not to beat a dead horse about inflation and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But even they're looking at this stuff going, oh, man, I could probably use some mean tweets right about now.
Yeah, no kidding. I swear, the fact that Trump is no longer on Twitter and isn't out there in the public every single day has really taken the focus off of the distraction and actually on the people who are just screwing things up right now. I mean, there was over the weekend Jim Acosta going after Trump, the Lord of the Lies. Yeah, we got it, Jim. Very thirsty Jim who can't quit Trump. But, I mean, it is kind of interesting how when the media isn't focused on Trump, they do have to at least talk about some of the issues, even if they're doing it dishonestly.
Well, I thought it was really funny, too, to bring up your point about Jim Acosta. I think CNN was doing a Trump rally dance in the same way that some of the Native Americans do a rain dance. They can't wait for that guy to get to a microphone because the only thing they have is the We Hate Trump rally cries. And since that's been gone, obviously you've seen the numbers tank at CNN, among other of your super woke progressive media outlets. But it's an interesting thing to watch unfold.
So I saw you post a video on Instagram this morning. I hope you can dive into a little bit more. You had yesterday President Biden responding to the synagogue hostage situation. He called it an act of terror. But he also said, hey, we got to wait and get some more information before we can go all in and describe why, for example, this specific synagogue was chosen out of all the other ones. And, you made the point of, yeah, we should be waiting, but you don't always hold that position, Joe Biden.
Yeah, I think in all of the tragic instances that happen around the country, within the 24-hour news cycle, most of everything that comes out, whether it's a shooting or some guy driving his car through a Christmas parade, it seems like the reporting on it is almost immediately wrong. And so my position overall is let's wait for some facts to come out and get a better of idea of what actually is happening and get a handle on the actual situation, which I think yesterday with Joe Biden saying was a good thing. However, unfortunately, there's so many examples of not only Joe Biden, but Vice President Harris and the rest of the Democratic liberal woke mob over there jumps to conclusions as evidenced by the Rittenhouse case, as evidenced by the Jacob Blake case. There are so many of these instances where they don't take that approach. And while I agree that maybe we should wait for things to unfold a little bit more before we jump to a conclusion or jump to a side, that isn't what they've been doing consistently throughout the last, couple of years now.
Joe Bob is a brand new contributor over at Turning Point USA. He's also the host of the Joe Bob Show on the Daily Caller Live. You can check out all of this at tpusa.com and, of course, on the Daily Caller's website. Joe Bob, thank you so much for joining me, my friend. Appreciate it.
Jason, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Now this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Jason Rant has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke the story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form. Presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Well, it sure seems like the Seattle Police Department doesn't want you to know that they just made a dramatic shift in policy, an announcement that was made the Friday afternoon before a long weekend. A memo came out that I was first to report on last week from Adrian Diaz, the interim chief of the SPD. It announced these new policies, basically stating that the SPD will no longer treat several violations, traffic violations, as the primary reason to engage in a traffic stop. They include expired or missing registration, license plates that are not properly displayed, the exact kinds of crimes that, or violations, I should say, that the police use to go after car thieves. And the reason why they did it was based in equity concerns, arguing one of two reasons. One coming from the police department, Adrian Diaz claiming that the fines disproportionately impact lower income communities. So by that definition, of course, we would not give away any tickets at all to someone if they can't afford them. And number two, the issue coming from the Inspector General of Seattle, Lisa Judge, that cops pulling over black motorists increases the risks of violence or death with the black motorist, because all cops, I guess, are racist. Joining me on the line to respond is a friend of the show, retired Sergeant Betsy Smith. She's a spokesperson for the National Police Association. Welcome back to the show.
Jason, thanks so much for having me. This is just such a crazy issue. More leftist insanity coming out of Seattle that while it seems to be designed to punish the police, once again, what it's going to do is punish the citizens.
Exactly. It gives a pass to the car thieves. So if you could, just take us through why car thieves would benefit from this. To be specific, they're no longer going to, as a primary source for the traffic stop, they're not going to enforce expired or missing vehicle registration, issues with the display of registration plates, or technical violations like items hanging from a rearview mirror or cracks in a windshield.
Well, police officers need reasons to pull over vehicles to conduct investigative stops. And very frequently, when we have, a license plate that is expired or the plate is askew, that can be indicative of a stolen vehicle. Because when somebody steals a vehicle and drives it around, Jason, they don't put a brand new sticker on it. They don't up the registration. So this is going to take another tool that Seattle PD has away from them to try to locate and also discover stolen vehicles. One of the things that car thieves do, and this is no secret, is they'll steal a license plate off one car, put it on another car that they've stolen to try to confuse the police. So if we can't pull these people over to conduct an investigative stop, that takes a real arrow out of our quiver to be able to do this. And there's the thing. Lisa Judge, you know, remember when she first got to her position, you know, in fact, even before, she talked about how, all Seattle cops are racist is basically what she said. And she's tempered her policies a little bit, but she still basically says that, well, the Seattle police is too racist to make these traffic stops.
And to be clear, with respect, because, and I know you're going to make this point, Lisa Judge tempered her position right now. I have no doubt that this will be expanded, that this will become more restrictive.
Well, sure. Why did they put this memo out the Friday afternoon of a holiday weekend? Because they don't want people to know about it until it's too late. And one of the things I want people to understand about expired license plates and things like that is you might say, well, you know, that seems like such a low level fine, or a low level problem. It is until you, a law abiding motorist, are involved in an accident with somebody who hasn't bothered to renew their plates, doesn't have insurance, all these quote unquote low level violations. And then there you are, stuck with the bill in a crash. This goes on and on and on, and again, affects the law-abiding citizens of Seattle. But this is something we've been hearing around the country as well. Traffic stops are dangerous. Traffic stops are dangerous for law enforcement.
Exactly.
Traffic stops are not dangerous for people who comply. And that's why the National Police Association has a PSA that we've been playing for a year, starring, incidentally, Mike Solon, who is, you know, the Police Association president in Seattle, where we ask people to simply comply with lawful orders. And if you don't like what the police officer did, then you can complain to their supervisor or anyone
exactly.
else you want. Comply now, complain later. You know, we just had a record number of police officers in the United States murdered feloniously. It's not the citizens who are in danger in a traffic stop if they comply. It's police officers who are conducting traffic stops and end up pulling over criminals.
Yeah, and I want to piggyback off of a point you made. We're talking with Betsy Smith. She's a retired sergeant. She's now the spokesperson for the National Police Association. Cops don't generally just pull over people because of traffic violations, unless they're especially egregious in front of them, that they will see instances in which, you know, a license plate isn't fully displayed, and they'll let that person go on average. It kind of depends on the city. Seattle is obviously understaffed, so it's not like they're throwing a whole bunch of emphasis on these issues. However, when they're in positions where they have reason to suspect that the driver is maybe behind the wheel of a stolen vehicle, they do use that to go after them. The problem you have now in Washington State, so this is now not just an SPD issue, but the state will not allow you to pursue or detain suspects based on a reasonable suspicion standard. Now it has to be well above that. It has to be, you have to have probable cause. And that means, let's say in an example here, you've got someone who's driving a car that is a model that is known to be stolen in, it's a Toyota Corolla, and a lot of them are being stolen. That person driving with their with registration that's missing or expired, or there's a license plate that's not properly displayed, and there's a bullet hole in the back of windshield, you still cannot just pull that person over under the current standards.
Yes, that's absolutely correct, and that is frightening for the citizens. You know, the standard of probable cause means that I can stop and arrest you. So without that high standard, that means I can't stop you. And what, you know, and again, people might say, well, that's good. I don't need the police stopping me. Let's look at some of the things that routine traffic stops have been able to solve or to fix. You know, the Oklahoma City bombing was solved because of a routine traffic stop. Now, that was a long time ago. But just last week, as we heard Dr. Fauci testify before the legislature this past week, there was a guy going from California driving to Washington, D.C., obviously a mentally ill guy, who said what he was doing was going to kill Dr. Fauci. That guy got stopped during a routine traffic stop in Iowa, and those police officers did an additional investigation and presumably saved the life of the left leading man, Dr. Fauci. That's what traffic stops do. And that's why for police officers in Seattle and throughout Washington State to be so restricted, again, you're not punishing the cops. You're punishing and ultimately endangering your citizens.
It is beyond disturbing. And again, the timing of this was intentional. They chose to release this on Friday. They did it in the middle of the afternoon, late afternoon. They knew that a lot of people had today off. It is disturbing what they did. And you know what? Shame on the SPD on their end, at least on the command staff level, with Adrian Diaz making this announcement on Friday. He could have made this announcement tomorrow when more people are paying attention. I get why the inspector general wants to do it, and I would understand why the city of Seattle wants to do it. But Adrian Diaz did not need to put it out on Friday, and it's disturbing. You know, it's coming after we had this task force that was tasked with looking at this. Yeah, who's on that task force? Because I asked that question on Friday. Still no one has gotten back to me. And I'm just kind of curious because they always say, well, you know, we have police voices on there. Yeah, were the police voices in line with this? And understand that Lisa Judge wanted to ban all traffic stops, every single one of them. So we very clearly know the direction that this is going in. I'm glad for the work that you're doing, Betsy, and just calling it out and making sure people know the context behind it. Again, Betsy Smith is a retired sergeant and now spokesperson for the National Police Association. Thank you so much for stopping by, as always. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason, for all you do.
Thank you. Now this.
We'll be right back. The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rants. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rants is in focus now.
Jason Rants, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
The Salt Lake City Tribune editorial board published an insane editorial. Just an absolutely insane editorial over the weekend, on Saturday to be specific, calling on the governor of Utah to use the National Guard to prevent unvaccinated residents or citizens from going anywhere and doing anything. And no, it is not me being over the top in my recollection of the editorial. It's quite literally what they wrote. They titled it, "Utah Leaders Have Surrendered to COVID Pandemic," the editorial board writes. And in it, it blames elected officials within Utah, not just Salt Lake City, but across the state, for failing to mandate a vaccine for everybody. They want the state to mandate the vaccine to treat Omicron surge, even though getting the vaccine does not protect one from getting or spreading Omicron. But it doesn't matter. Facts like that don't matter. The people who scream the loudest about trusting the science seem to ignore it when it doesn't fulfill their ideological positions. And so they said that if Utah truly was, in their estimation, a civilized place, the governor of Utah, who's a Republican by the name of Spencer Cox, would implement the vaccine mandate and have the National Guard enforce this mandate by not allowing any of the unvaccinated folks to go, quote, anywhere. This is the exact quote. Were Utah a truly civilized place, the governor's next move would be to find a way to mandate this kind of mass vaccination campaign we should have launched a year ago, going as far as to deploy the National Guard to ensure that people without proof of vaccination would not be allowed, well, anywhere. That is truly, 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 truly insane. That's not what you do in, quote unquote, a civilized place. A civilized place does not mandate medical treatment to people who might not need it or want it. And that they seemingly got caught off guard, because some of the response to this, I can't imagine they were expecting, is just laughable to me. Absolutely laughable. And they go on, of course, to attack mostly Republicans. They say government officials, mostly but not exclusively Republicans, were apparently determined not to be caught governing in the face of this challenge. Any move or recommendation to mask up, or when safe and effective vaccines became available, to make vaccinations a requirement of admission to public places and society in general, was shouted down as an unwarranted imposition on individual freedoms. Of course, they don't like the whole concept of standing up for individual freedoms, such as, you know, the ability of a free press to operate and say stupid hot takes however often they would like. Cox and so many others have not carried the courage of their convictions. Cox, state legislative leaders, our congressional delegation, and Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes have so proudly stood against the kind of vaccine mandates that civilized society has used for generations to effectively wipe out everything from polio to diphtheria to the measles. Now, these dum-dums think that COVID is going to be wiped out. The measles isn't wiped out. Polio is barely wiped out. I mean, it's technically considered eradicated, but it still exists. There are only two viruses that are considered by the World Health Organization as eradicated, and that's mostly a technical classification. That they think that COVID as a virus is going to go away shows you how little they actually know about the virus and about viruses in general. This is just absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. And the lieutenant governor of Utah, her name is Deirdre Henderson. She had tweeted this insanity out over the weekend, saying the truth is Omicron is out of control everywhere, even in places with mask and vaccine mandates. We always push vaccines, but even vaccinated people are catching it. It's easy to take shots from the cheap seats. But this is the sort of nonsense that makes editorial boards irrelevant. And she's right. It absolutely makes editorial boards irrelevant. This is not some group of people that should be trusted on anything, but I'm sure they'll come out with their recommendations of who to vote for. Ignore them. Do your own research, because apparently they're not capable of doing research at all themselves.
The Last Rant.
And with that, Today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And normally there are radio hosts or columnists or TV voices who will take time out of the day to talk about the importance of a holiday and whatnot. And there's no doubt, obviously, that Martin Luther King Jr. was incredibly important, still is important, less so because of what the left is doing on racial grievance politics and identity politics, where at one point we actually look to MLK and say, hey, that whole idea of not judging people on the basis of skin color and instead on their character, that should be a societal ideal. Well, that's gone away, where the left now wants us to exclusively talk about people, view people, judge people on the basis of their skin color. If you're white, you're supposed to be viewed as an oppressor. If you're black, you're supposed to be pitied as an oppressed. Now, I find that to be an odious viewpoint. We should be viewing people on who they are, what they stand for, how they act, not on their skin color. But, you know, 2022, apparently that is a controversial hot take. But I'm not going to talk too much about MLK. The same way on President's Day, I don't talk about any presidents that we honor. I just generally don't do that. And it got me wondering, because we're obviously working today, even though it's a federal holiday and I had today off. We chose to work. I made that choice in large part because, number one, we've always kind of worked on MLK Day, because other than schools and some federal buildings, people are still going to work today, or a lot of people are going to work today. Now, maybe that's changed. I don't know. But it got me wondering as to whether or not we should take today off. But it's weird to take time off when it's not like on Christmas, where obviously I take off, although as a Jew, I don't celebrate. But the world comes to a standstill, or this country comes to a standstill, where people are celebrating, spending time with family and friends. And that's the day that everyone sort of has this shared experience around, for the most part. MLK Day, that's not the case. There aren't people today truly celebrating the honor, the idea, the icon of MLK. They're just taking today off and not doing anything. And it's kind of the same way around Veterans Day, where people don't care about the veterans. They're just taking the day off and they pretend to care. There are a few holidays in which people actually celebrate to the point where it makes sense for them to take off. And also just comes at a time where, you know, everyone kind of just needs a collective break. You don't need to take Thanksgiving Day after off, right? Black Friday, you don't have to take that day off. But we choose to take it off. July 4th is probably one of the few holidays that's not specific to a religious position that folks celebrate. And even then, it's kind of, they just do a barbecue, and that's supposed to be the symbolism of it. So, you know, it's weird, as I was thinking about whether or not we were going to take today off. Like, I'm not going to pretend that I would have otherwise spent my day talking about MLK and thinking about his influence. I do that already. I literally do that almost every single day that I do a TV hit, because I usually talk about topics around racial identity and identity politics. So I'm already doing that. I don't need to pretend that I need today off for that purpose, because his spirit lives on beyond just one day. If only the folks on the left could remember what it is he stood for, well, maybe I'd give you a pass for having today off. And that's the last rants.